You're listening to a 95BFM podcast.
Research by the University of Otago has shown a lack of consultation from local government with Māori on decisions around alcohol and licensing. This is in comparison with the relatively large influence alcohol companies and lobbies have in decision making. Lachlan spoke earlier today with, he spoke yesterday with the lead author of the article, Professor Kypros Kypri, about the research. First, asking him what the main findings were.
The main findings are that the sort of consultation process that councils undertake in order to develop local alcohol policies is not really very effective from the point of view of engaging with Māori communities who make submissions. And it was meant to be. You know, the purpose of the new Liquor Act was to increase, one of the purposes was to increase community input, irrespective, you know, Māori and non-Māori input to liquor licensing. Instead, what we have is a system where you go to, you know, submitters make go to a lot of trouble, and it's quite technically demanding. They don't hear much back, and what they see, you know, over a period of months, is sort of influence of industry interests with the, who seem to have quite cosy relationship with councils, but not genuine consultation with themselves. Yeah.
So what sort of things are we seeing when Māori submit?
They're two councils who are operating, you know, as the district licensing authority, essentially. So they are encouraged to make submissions, and that part of it works well. But when they do that, and they're written submissions, but they can also be supported with oral submissions, councils, you know, are keen to encourage input, but then there isn't a continuing conversation about the nature of the provisional local alcohol policy, such that you know, and when there is sort of some discussion, it often involves multiple meetings, you know, quite heavy demands on Māori communities, who then have to go back and consult and, you know, check that everyone's on the same page. But ultimately you end up with policies that don't seem to reflect the input that's been made, and where members of the consultation groups, representatives of the organisations, observe that industry actors seem to be able to get what they're asking for, which is typically more access to sell and longer trading hours.
And why do you feel there is a lack of meaningful consultation with Māori?
Yeah, well, a meaningful consultation would be a back and forth that involved discussion, you know, genuine engagement. Mm. And so I think it's pretty clear that Māori don't feel they're being listened to beyond having made that initial submission. The comments, you know, that exemplified that include, for example, the rules kept on changing. You'd go to one meeting and then to the next meeting, and it was almost a completely different scenario. The definition of the areas, and by that presumably they're talking about the geographic space, they changed quite a bit. That was really hard to get through. We'd be pushing the proverbial uphill. Another comment, information flow was really poor. I wasn't advised of the outcome, like I had to push to make sure that I maintained my spot on the submission hearings timetable. There were heaps of process issues. So there's frustration with the process. And then, you know, then there's a comment, industry pretty much slammed every second sentence in our submission. Our submissions were pretty much ripped apart. So that doesn't look like a process that was in the kind of process that was intended in the legislation. I think that's the key. We're evaluating the legislation in lots of different ways. This is one of them, in terms of its stated objectives. And one of the stated objectives was to improve community input. So that doesn't look like improved community input.
And as you briefly mentioned, sort of industry has a lot of power in this situation. They also have a lot more resources, I'd imagine, than other submitters. Does the legislation sort of provide any means for other members of the community to get greater resources in making submissions?
No, it doesn't. And that's, you're right, that's a significant shortcoming. You just got a very unequal, an uneven playing field. So the industry seems to treat the decisions that are being made on alcohol licensing since the new legislation with a kind of, they take great care in analysing them and ensuring that they have they're being well represented, you know, legally, they treat each one as a sort of test case. So from the earliest point at which our local alcohol policies were established by councils, the first one was in Tasman, for example, in the territorial authority, and not long after that there was one in Dunedin, and also there's been one in Auckland. They've been challenged by industry, and so they bring, you know, a great deal of financial resource to that, and territorial authorities themselves, the larger ones, may have the resources to defend those, but they're costly, so they'd think twice, and the smaller territorial authorities would be really disinclined to go out on a limb to defend or to put forward and then defend a policy that reflects the community interest.
And why is it so important that Māori are not only consulted, but that their recommendations are actually taken on board and implemented?
It's important for two main reasons. One is to do with the health and well-being of the Māori community, which I'll come back to, and the other one is to do with obligations under the treaty. So it's just honouring treaty obligations. Mm. In fact, there's a claim currently with the Waitangi Tribunal made by David Ratu, a Māori warden in South Auckland, who argues that the alcohol legislation, this is the Sale and Supply of Alcohol Act of 2012, does not honour the treaty. It doesn't include a treaty clause like many pieces of legislation do, and it effectively devolves the responsibility for liquor licensing to local government, but not all of the powers necessary to make sure that public interest is protected or advanced. So that's quite a big issue in a country where you've got this treaty obligation. Mm. In the case that I'm more typically focused on, which is health outcomes, alcohol is one of several drivers of inequality and outcome of Māori and non-Māori. There's a 5 to 7 year gap in life expectancy and generally worse health outcomes for Māori. And we need to be doing everything we can to ensure that doesn't widen and to narrow that gap as quickly as possible. So if Māori communities are not managing to regulate the availability and promotion of alcohol locally in their midst, that's likely to, you know, either worsen or at best not improve the status quo, where there's, you know, quite a high prevalence of hazardous drinking and related harm.
And just finally, what would you like to see change, I suppose, within the legislation, but also with how the legislation is implemented?
I think if the technocrats know how to draft the legislation, and without being too specific, I think the objective must be to ensure that communities have more say and that the industry can't dictate terms in these local plans. Now, local government, as it turns out, and something that I studied on seeing these findings, to be able to relate them to other spheres of public discourse in New Zealand, was, in fact, there's a long history of local authorities failing to meet treaty obligations, and in many cases they don't see that they have treaty obligations. So, you know, it's unsurprising that they wouldn't meet them. But it also requires considerable resource. So if central government is going to devolve the responsibility, they have to ensure that the territorial authorities, councils, have the powers to and resources necessary to discharge those obligations to Māori under the treaty.
Irirangi Pōhō, Radio Bosom.
The Wire.
That was a 95BFM podcast. To hear more, head to 95BFM.com/bcasts.